Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp. Well, welcome back, everyone, to this episode of Influential She, our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. I'm your co-host, Mel Schopp.
And I'm Deb Soholt, and we're just so excited that everybody is tuning in today. We're going to be spending some time in this podcast talking about our high-leverage practice of doing. And, you know, so many times just making a decision to do, to get going, is like moving on from being somewhat stuck. You know, talk a little bit, Mel, about there's a committee in your head. And it's in this constant negotiation about should I, shouldn't I, should I move forward, shouldn't I move forward? And doing is sometimes just about rolling up your sleeves, make a decision, even if it isn't exactly the right decision, because nothing will ever be perfect, so that you can be more influential.
I just remember, you know, working with staff, and sometimes we would get so caught up in making sure that we made the right decision. It's like, you know, once we make the decision, we can always adjust and go from there. But boy, we just get really almost petrified and can't move on beyond that. And so today we have a guest, I think, that just exemplifies really what leveraging doing means. And we're just so excited today to have Amy Skinner with us, who is a longtime friend. And I'm trying to remember, Amy, when we first met, maybe some 10 years ago, or may even be longer than that.
Yeah, I was trying to think the same thing, Mel, and it probably was 10 or so years ago. Mm-hmm. It was definitely in the education space.
Yeah, it was in the education space. And at that time, you were doing some work with the Education Commission of the States as their communication person. And it's interesting how I think there are some people who you have this instant attraction to. And here was this, you know, this young, vibrant woman who I just thought, wow, she's really got this going for her. And you have just proved that over and over again in some of the work that you've been doing. So, Amy, it might be helpful if you just give a short little background on where you've been and where you're at today. And then we're going to have a great conversation with you today.
You bet. Thank you so much. And I must say, I have been following the both of you since before you launched Influential She, and have just been so excited to see the work that you're doing. And I know personally, listening to so many of these podcasts have really inspired me. So I appreciate what you're doing. That's the first thing I want to get out there.
Thank you, Amy.
That's really kind.
You bet. And I'm honored. I'm honored to be somebody talking with you all today and kind of sharing a little bit about my background and how I would say persevered or got through some situations here recently. But my professional background goes, it's been in communications for a long time. It was in a worldwide IT company for a while. And then I got into the education space and worked for a school district, the state of Colorado, Education Commission of the States. And now I'm with the National Conference of State Legislators.
Which I love as a state senator.
I know. And I love that our paths have crossed, you know, mine with Mel, with Education Commission of the States, and now with Deb with NCSL. So it's a nice small world thing here. I've really enjoyed the communications work and doing a lot of outreach and engagement, that type of communications and branding, building brand and reputation through consistent communications, that sort of thing. And it's funny, Mel, that you say the instant attraction thing, because I truly remember meeting you the first time and being in awe and just thinking that you had it all together and carried yourself so well. And I was like, if I could just be that person. So yeah, it's funny how you look up to people and they don't even probably know it at the time. So
that's really kind. Amy, I think also a part that makes you who you are is you are a mother of two girls, and I know you have a dog. But I you know, those things are things that sometimes we kind of gloss over and we talk about ourselves professionally, but I know you're a great mother as well. And, you know, that has been a huge part of your life, and particularly as a single mom.
Definitely. My girls, anybody who knows me, knows that they are everything to me. I truly love being a mom more than anything in the world. I have a 10th grader and a 7th grader, and they're just so much fun. And they inspire me every single day to be a better person, to be a better mom. I grew up in a huge amount of instability, just crazy chaos. And I knew that if I was fortunate to be a mom someday, that I would do everything in the world to provide my kids with a really stable, fun upbringing. And divorce wasn't part of my plan, I'll tell you that for sure. I never in a million years thought that I'd be a part-time mom. And that's been a struggle the last almost 6 years now. But it also just makes you make the most of every second that you have with your kids. And we really try to do that. Today was a snow day, work from home day, and typing away on my laptop while hearing them in the background was just a lot of fun.
So Amy, you alluded just a little bit to, you know, having this background where you had to make some decisions about doing something different. Can you tell us just a little bit more about that and how you really started to develop your decision-making muscle?
Yeah, you know, it was, I remember being in my 20s and having one of the most amazing jobs ever. I was working for Sun Microsystems on a worldwide communications team, making incredible money. And every single day, I just felt so uninspired. I felt like I didn't want to go to work. I didn't enjoy what I did. I liked the type of work I was doing, but the industry just bored me to death. And I remember just kind of panicking and thinking, I have to change paths completely, but that'll probably mean a huge salary cut and starting over a little bit. I was a new mom at the time and already felt a little overwhelmed, but was lucky to have a really important person in my life that, you know, gave me some confidence to go forward and change direction and got going in education and kind of haven't looked back.
So what was that? I'm kind of curious about how that person encouraged you to go that direction, because it's a leap, you know, quite a leap, in fact, from the IT world into the education world.
I'm one of those people that my family, for the most part, are people that have chosen to be my family, not really blood related. My dad in my life was my stepdad for a couple years when I was a kid, and when my mom divorced him, he told me he would never leave me, that he'd be my dad as long as I wanted him. And gosh, 45 years later, he's my dad and he's my daughter's grandpa. His wife is just as influential in my life. And he was the one that just said, Amy, you know, you've got the rest of your life. If opportunity is in front of you, you always take it. You always have to keep moving forward. And he's been the one that's been a constant influencer in my life and has given me the confidence to just know that I can make good decisions.
You know, it's interesting when you said or alluded to the fact that here you were in a kind of what people might see as a dream job, just visited with another young woman who's making some waves. And she made this comment about just because you can doesn't mean you should. And that sounds like a lot about what you were talking about, because you were obviously very successful in the IT world and then made the leap into a totally different space in the education world.
You know, and what it did too, though, Mel, is I was able to take so much of what I learned in that for-profit world and apply it to both the education community, those type of communications, but also nonprofit. Because when you approach communications in the sense that you're really doing effective outreach and engagement, that spans across platforms from education to nonprofit to for-profit. So the skill set, you know, carries through. It's just a matter of applying it in a different manner, if that makes sense.
And, you know, I think, Amy, sometimes people don't realize that moving forward, taking another step and doing something, while it can seem like you're changing direction, you're also, as you talked about, pulling all those skills. And I think sometimes women wait. They want it to be all so perfect and they hold back from moving another step with saying, well, what do I know? What skills do I have to do something different? Did you feel that for yourself, kind of a fear trying to go through that and then just having to say, heck, I know more than I think I do?
I think what I did actually, Deb, is I think that I sold myself so hard for the jobs that I interviewed for that once I got them, I found myself having no option other than to prove that they made the right choice. So I don't know that I had the skill set needed for a couple of my jobs when I started them. I look back and I think I was so green and probably not completely prepared. But then once you're in the role, you just go for it. You just figure out how to make it all happen because you don't want anybody to be faced with the thought that they hired the wrong person.
So Amy, tell us a little bit more about how you went about I'm just doing this. Like, I'm just going to make this happen. What were some of the things that you felt while you were making those kind of changes?
So part of it was just wanting to, it's so simple. I really wanted to be passionate about the content that I was living and breathing every single day. And when I was in the IT world, specifically in IT services department, I felt stupid because I would read the same stuff over and over and over and not understand it. And it was just because I had no interest in it. And I wanted to apply the time during my career, during the day, learning and working with information that I was passionate about. When you're passionate about something, it tends to make sense. You absorb it. You can think through it and come up with, in my case, with good communication strategy for it. I would just say I knew I wanted to make them, you spend so much time at work. It's not an hour out of your day or even five. It's so consuming. And if you're not fired up about it and if it's not exhilarating, it's just not worth it. That was kind of my motivation. My mode has also always been to listen to everybody. So to build a network of other people in the communications profession and just ask questions, question after question, and listen and observe how other people do similar work and take what, take from others what works for me and adapt it to whatever project I'm working on. But really learning from the experience of other people and other communicators has been helpful for me. I don't have to reinvent the wheel and do it all on my own. I can look at other resources and networks and improvise and build from there.
So, Amy, I think that all of those things that you did in really learning to develop what we call the decision-making muscle and dodging and weaving and really building up your ability to get things done or purposely done, sort of an intentionality. I think I can say that this really might have been part of the thing that helped you through some really difficult things that just came about in your life as of recently. And I don't know if you want to talk about that with us, but I think about what a strong woman it took to deal with some of the recent situations that come about. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. And I would agree. I think, I have had good experiences or have made good outcomes from kind of using that decision-making tool or aspect. And just at a high level, quickly in the last few years, there's the divorce, which is anybody who's gone through that or watched a friend or daughter or mother go through that, it's devastating. It's tough. So you kind of rebuild and reevaluate and reinvent yourself after going through divorce and making sure my daughters were getting through it okay. Right after that, my mom was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and that was absolutely just devastating. The prognosis was, about 3 years, which is about what she ended up living. A year into her battle with ALS, I got a call from a Denver detective letting me know that I'd been identified as a victim in a invasion of privacy for a sexual gratification case that he was investigating, which was about the most bizarre call you can ever get while sitting in a meeting at work. I'll tell you, I ended up meeting with him and he showed me a folder that came off the computer of one of my coworkers at a prior job. And the folder was titled Amy Skinner. And he opened it up and there were hundreds of photos of me, of my skirt, down my shirt, down the back of my pants. A lot of people call it upskirting. For 2.5 years while I worked with this guy, while I considered him a friend, walked to Starbucks with him. He took very inappropriate photos of me absolutely without any knowledge at all. And it wasn't just me. There were 20 to 30 other people that worked at the same organization that had this happen.
Okay, but Amy, I think that the next step is what, you know, is the thing that I think I'm most proud of you for being able to do, because, okay, that you found the situation, but you had some decisions to make at that point in time, some really important decisions. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, thank you. The first thing I did was start working with the Denver DA, the District Attorney's Department, and being very active in the criminal case against this guy. He had, I don't even know, I believe around 40 charges in the criminal trial, everything from felony stalking to invasion of privacy for sexual gratification. He had a sexual assault charge. And there was a small group of us that went through the whole criminal trial. You know, we all testified and told our story to the jury. And there were quite a few people actually that chose not to be part of the trial. And I honor them. You know, it wasn't something that they wanted to do for whatever reason. I knew personally that I had to do everything in my power to put him behind bars and to kind of have the last word in it. Sometimes I feel silly that I was so traumatized. I'm like, okay, somebody took photos of your skirt. What's the big deal? But I think it's just that when I try to explain it, it's the fact that I was at work. I was at a safe place in my mind. I was trying to support my daughters. And, you know, you go to work every single day, you work your hardest, and you just never think you're going to be the victim of a crime like this at your workplace. So, and also, you know, that betrayal that he was a friend of mine, it made me question all my judgment. But the only thing that kind of made that better is that there were, like I said, 20 to 30 other people that thought he was their friend also. But I did decide, to go back to your question, I did definitely decided to be as active as possible in his trial in making sure that he is currently spending plenty of time in prison. So I that was one of those decisions that wasn't even a thought for me. I just was going to do it.
So Amy, I mean, this, like you said, came out of the blue. I mean, this was like such a shocking phone call. How long did, you know, what was that time of, oh my gosh, to now I have to do something about this? Did that happen quickly for you, or was, you know, did you, I mean, I'm sure you had support in relationship to that, but you know, it's a pretty bold move to start moving forward.
Yeah, it definitely went pretty quickly. Not as quickly as I would like. The trial took what, like 6 or 9 months, I think about 9 months. So at the time it felt like it was going on and on and on forever. And we just all wanted it to be over. But I knew immediately, you know, that I was going to act on it. I think like so many women, you know, I just turned 50 this year, like so many women my age, there's been an event of, some sort of sexual assault in your past. And, you know, I didn't do anything about it when I was younger. And so I knew this time that there's no way in hell that anybody was going to get away with doing something to me that I hadn't given permission. So, yeah, that decision was quick. The getting through it every day was not so quick. And especially when you're trying to balance being a mom and being a positive, stable, happy mom. I grew up with a very unstable, more depressed mother, and I knew that that was never what I wanted to be to my daughters. So trying to find that balance of, you know, they need to know that mom's going through a lot and this is heavy and it's challenging, but it doesn't define me. And it doesn't define me as a person, as a mom, as a friend, as anything. But also that I'm human. And there were days that I cried a lot and there were days where I was angry, but most days, you know, those feelings were, try to move from the more negative feelings quickly and get into the gratitude and joyful times, because that's just a lot more fun.
So Amy, I'm curious if you found that there was people who maybe not put roadblocks in your way, but were not as supportive as you were going through this, like, oh my gosh, Amy, just get, get over this? Or did you encounter any of that along the way?
I didn't have any like family or friends that gave me that impression. I definitely sensed from some people that they didn't think it was that big of a deal. That, you know, if you're not physically touched, then how are you really a victim of something? I had several instances where people said things like, "What do you mean? How could you not know that somebody was taking pictures of you?" And yeah, I wish I had an answer to that. You know, when you trust someone and you're just walking alongside them, or they're walking behind you in a staircase, I would never entered my mind what he could be doing. I think, you know, where I struggled the most was trying to balance the personal pain and going through that, plus, you know, still trying to get through my mom's illness and a few other things that ended up happening. My boyfriend had a brain tumor and had neurosurgery during this time. So it was just kind of like one thing after another. But trying to balance all this with work was difficult. Being as positive and professional as I could, but yet, you know, the pain I felt in the morning when I woke up from going through this, doesn't just go away when you walk in the doors of the office. You know, you're still that same person, even though you're supposed to put on your professional hat and not let those things impact you. I found that really difficult to manage.
You know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, when Mel and I, you know, being socialized on here's how you should be in the organization. And, you know, when you walk in the door, the rest of you just doesn't exist. And as I became more influential in my role and developed maturity, I just realized what nonsense that was. And how with my team, I mean, if you want a whole person to show up and to be a part of the work and you want leveraged talent, that doesn't just come from some one-dimensional place where everything else, it's all of you. You know, it's your passion and your intelligence and your drive to be there and your enthusiasm. And but it also brings, when things are happening here, if you want long-term people to be a part of something bigger, it's all of them. It's how you channel it and you work with it. But it's unrealistic to think that everybody's just on this like super duper high every second in their life and they can somehow disconnect and become a one-dimensional person. Did you feel that with this work?
Yeah, I think what I would say is also a little unrealistic to think that everybody leaves their personal issues at home. That was one of the things I kind of felt at the office where I worked, was that, okay, everybody has personal stuff going on. Not everybody talks about it at work. Not everybody knows that people have personal stuff. It just, you know, keep it out of the office. And that works for some people. Some people are really private. Some people don't share at all. But that's not who I am. I'm a pretty open person. And I love my network of support. And sometimes that network of support, like I said, when you're at the office for, you know, 8+ hours a day, your network of support can be your peers and your friends that you meet in the office too. And I'm just not a person that can not be that full Amy at work. I like to share. I like to have the encourage the support. And my team was amazing through all this. I managed a team of young career professional women. And, you know, I enjoyed talking to them about it, letting them know that, you know, showing them the example that you don't let people get away with hurting you in life. And you do whatever it takes and you take the action to make that person, you know, pay with, you know, in this case with prison time for the damage done. So I think if I wouldn't have brought my personal problems to the office, I wouldn't have given that example to some pretty impressionable young women. And I know it made a difference on them. And so, you know, it's just tough sometimes to find that balance of who do I want to be at the office and how much of me do I want to let out without having repercussions.
So Amy, you are now in a new role, and I know this is an exciting opportunity for you. And I also know, though, that you've done some things to really make sure that you are taking care of Amy. I'm just so impressed. I know that was it a couple months ago, you took some time and you went away and went to a yoga retreat and built not only your emotional self, but your physical self. What are some of the things that you do that really help to re-engage and reinvigorate yourself?
So I love that question. I definitely did. First of all, to touch base on the yoga retreat, it was something that I wanted to do more than anything. The year I got divorced, I just wanted to go and find myself on a yoga retreat. I've been practicing yoga for about probably 20 years and just thought going away for a week would be amazing. And financially, I couldn't do it. And then my mom was diagnosed and I couldn't do it. And there are all these reasons for years that I wasn't able to schedule it or afford it. And then when my mom passed a year ago, January, I promised myself that I would do something special like that. So I made it happen. And that's actually where I did the final interviews, started the final interview process for the new job I'm in. So I know I feel like I manifested a lot of goodness by taking that time to just go within and find strength again. My time with my daughters is always my happy place to go and kind of get away from any stress or difficult times, whatever it might be, just see the world through their eyes and really appreciate the joy that they bring. I don't know. I live in Colorado, so the mountains, of course, hiking and getting outside, getting out in nature. But I'm a huge fan of mostly making sure I have plenty of time on my yoga mat.
And I'm just thinking about just the week before, I know I got a message from you. It's like, so excited to go. And then you had, I mean, this is the Amy I know, your back went out and you didn't know if you were even going to be able to go to this retreat that you waited for many, many years. So good example of somebody who's just not going to talk about moving on from stuckness. You know, your back was stuck and you still did it anyway.
Literally moving on from stuckness. I had help with medication though. I called my doctor right away. I knew that was something that I needed some professional help with. I got a muscle relaxer for a couple of days and it kind of helped out. But the first day of the retreat, I was kind of hobbling around until I was able to, hang in ragdoll as the position for me and get my back in the chair. So then I ended up sending you photos where I was jumping in the air.
Yes.
On my arms and all kinds of things.
Pretty amazing.
But Amy, you know, you raise a good point about asking for help. And you talked about the network of people that are around you and not having to, you know, put everything out for everyone and share all your vulnerabilities, but share enough that people can support. And also in, you know, you wanted to do this and yet you needed help to do it. And you have to reach out and get what you need. You can't always, you just can't go it alone. And this is part about this decision-making and doing is letting others help you along for the ride.
And I think that's such a good point, because I think I'm sure you can speak this too, but boy, for a long time, my determination, I came to work as Superwoman and there was no way that anybody was going to see any vulnerable side of me. Didn't matter if I had driven, you know, 2.5 hours at 3 a.m. in the morning to get from the farm to pier, and I was going to show up and it was going to be happy and perky. And it took me a long time to realize that sharing that vulnerable side was part of really being more authentic. And I know we're kind of getting into some other practices, but Amy, I think what you did was really a powerful piece in helping others to see the value in letting them into your life at some point.
I appreciate that. And I have to tell you just a quick story. And Mel, I don't think you even know this about me, but I have a tattoo on my inner right foot, kind of down by my ankle. And it's an African symbol that represents strength with humility. And I spent about 5 years, you know, I wasn't one to tattoo my body just on a whim. I spent about 5 years researching and thinking about what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I decided on this particular symbol because it's really about being grounded. It's on my foot. So being grounded in strength, particularly inner strength. It's on my inner foot. And yet being humble and knowing when to ask for help. Because I would say the first at least 25, 30 years of my life, I was just like you, like Superwoman. Nobody's going to, I don't need help from anybody. I've got this. I'm proving it to the world. And everybody says you become more wise with age. And I definitely have learned the value of letting other people support me, especially like emotionally, mentally, and just with friendship and love and care. It's amazing what a good support network can do if you let them.
And don't you feel, I mean, like Amy, in your stories, with this network, that your influence has grown instead of detracted? I mean,
100%. Yes.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we think the only way we're going to be influential is to just have it, you know, ourselves really buttoned up and we're just really, you know, acting the part. It doesn't matter what's going on inside of us or what storms are there personally or what vulnerabilities we have. We're going to plow our way through this and dang it, then we'll be influential. Whereas doing with others and getting that support actually grows your influence and in your decision making about those that you trust and want to talk to. I'm not talking about just, you know, going out and opening up about absolutely everything to everyone, but in having others help you to decide and to do things, do you feel your influence grows?
100%. I think it's really just because the authenticity, you know, like people see you as genuine and they know that you're trusting them with your authentic self. And that you're not at all trying to be something that you're not. You know, it builds that trust by being. And it's so funny. I'm interrupting myself there, but in communications, I've always taken the approach of being authentic and never putting spin on anything. But you do the best when you're just very authentic, and that's how you build trust and build, you know, reputation through branding and all that. Yet with my own personal self, I didn't follow that practice for so long, right? But you definitely do. I think the relationships become so much deeper and more trusting when people experience who you really are instead of who you want them to think you are.
And sometimes that doing isn't the right thing. Like, you know, you don't always end up in the right place. So you can, you know, just say, you know, you do something and you go, ooh, that I wish I hadn't done that. Or, you know, it was like, but that is also about building trust with others in saying that was not the right thing, but I learned a lot from that. I wouldn't do it again, but here's what I got from that. So I think also in building influence, it's about, you know, accepting when you made a decision that wasn't even the best decision, but it happened. And now I'm moving on from that.
And that makes me think of like one of my favorite mantras from one of my favorite yoga teachers. She always says that what you put your mind to grows stronger. And so sometimes when you're in those stuck places or you don't know what to do, if you just let yourself keep perseverating and thinking that you're stuck or thinking that you're upset or hurt or whatever it is, and you think about that, you let your mind think about that nonstop, you do get so stuck there. But you have to realize you can change that thought pattern and you can choose to move on. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not, you know, I think people say that just choose happiness. Yeah, you can. You also have to grieve. You also have to hurt. You have to give yourself time to get through all that. But at some point, you do have to kind of choose to move beyond and choose the type of life and the type of day, the type of feelings you want to experience.
I think that's what we call moving on from that endless loop of the committee in your head. So good example.
Yeah.
Well, Amy, we just so appreciate you sharing your story, and particularly your story of being so vulnerable and having something happen to you that was completely unexpected, that really does shatter your trust, and talking about moving through that and making decisions to do something different and to stay in a space where you just have this great, juicy life. And just really appreciate you being on the show. Thank you so much.
And thank you both so much for just helping all of us, you know, like I said, through all the podcasts I've listened to and everything that you've been doing on your website. I've learned so much from listening to other women. And I just appreciate that you're putting this venue together to share, for women to share. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And to our listeners, we really appreciate you being a part of this show today. And we want to leave you with a question. You know, are there areas of your life where you are completely stuck, where you're listening to the committee in your head, and those multiple voices are keeping you from really making a decision to move forward? We want you to ask yourself, what would I do if I didn't have to do it perfectly? And see what that answer is for you. We really appreciate you for tuning in to another episode of Influential She. We hope you'll do it again. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.